You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
And the future is this national broadband investment.
Hey presto, we are suddenly going to get 10 times the speed from something that isn't even built yet, I find utterly implausible.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last week, the long-awaited coalition ITC policy was released to less than rapturous acclaim. In a package of minimal spending and conservative politics, the coalition have only allocated $6.3 billion over 7 years towards the most important infrastructure upgrade in Australian history. This time a century ago, the copper network was all ago, allowing people to talk on a new device called the telephone. In fact, in 1880, the first telephone exchange was opened in Australia. It's hard for us today, more than a century later, to appreciate the impact that the new invention of the telephone had on our young country. In what can only be described as a major disappointment, the Coalition's long-awaited broadband policy will use government funding to leverage a privately run high-speed network to deliver 12 to 100 megabits per second to 97% of households, using a combination of existing HFC cable, DSL and fixed wireless. As anyone involved in the communications industry will tell you, wireless is by no way a substitution for cable, albeit copper or glass. And there is just no way wireless can come anywhere near the speed of fibre optic. Its only advantage is its cost effectiveness in delivering services to locations and households in remote locations. Chances are, though, it's these remote households that will benefit the most with high-speed broadband for education, business and entertainment reasons. It can be said that the Nationals are letting down their core supporter base, the people who they are supposed to represent. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Julia Gillard and Communications Minister Stephen Conroy were in Hobart last Thursday to officially launch the first part of the National Fibre Optic Broadband Network, otherwise known as the NBN. In what was a shock announcement to Tony Abbott, and which in turn brought about a barrage of scorn and ridicule towards the Labor Party, Senator Conroy announced that fibre optic speeds will hit 1 gigabit per second, 10 times faster than first thought. This is not surprising to those in the business. In fact, these speeds are still rather slow for fibre optics. But that's not taking into account a high data flow and lots of concurrent connections. Conroy said the announcement by NBN Co. to increase capacity on the network shows that fibre technology is truly about future-proofing the nation. But one has to ask if this is a conspiracy on behalf of NBN Co. protecting its future. NBN Co. Chief Executive Mike Quigley denied this revelation of the national broadband network speeds of up to 1 gigabits per second had anything to do with supporting Labor's election chances, in the face of a coalition policy that would see his fledgling broadband company shut down. The announcement came just 10 days before Election Day, but Senator Conroy said he was only told of the increase in speeds the previous night. Finally, both ITC policies are on the table for all to consider before we choose a government on August the 21st. And it's certainly not hard to see which party is looking to future-proof Australia and which party is looking at the short term. Australia has slipped in internet speed rankings in the past few years, but with the NBN now being built, high-speed broadband is now a real possibility for the long term, and will enable us to move back up to where we need to be in the global community. So, for those who need to hear what the NBN is in plain speak, put simply, it's the equivalent of the Industrial Revolution from a communications point of view. high-speed broadband will affect the prosperity of nearly every Australian and determine the success of every other policy rolled out by all political parties at this election. Copper was the technological plumbing of the 20th century, and fibre optics is its equivalent for the 21st.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we take a detailed look at both the major parties' offerings in high-speed broadband. Adam Turner gives the iPhone 4 the death grip using Australian telcos. Victoria to clamp down on improper video surveillance. Telstra warns ISPs to expect aggressive competition. Australia takes a step towards secure internet, and disputed bills saddle Telstra with a $90 million debt. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra shares slump to an all-time low. The Liberals announced their broadband alternative, and NBN Co. says its network will deliver speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second. Twitter launches its tweet button, Android enables voice search, and a frustrated airline attendant becomes an overnight internet sensation. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra shares slumped to an all-time low of $2.82 last Friday, despite the telco's plans to make a large profit from the sale of its stake in Chinese ISP, Sofun. Stock analysts say that the 10% fall, which saw more than $3.6 billion wiped off Telstra's market value, could have serious political ramifications. Telstra's chief executive officer, Mr. David Thodey, was optimistic about Telstra's share price and said that the telco will transform itself and concentrate on its most important asset, the customer.
I've said often, and I want to stress again today, the biggest asset that Telstra has is our customer base, and we've been losing too many customers. We cannot allow it. In fact, you know, I will not allow it. Short term, there is an impact. However, in the long term, as we've said, we're going to see improvement, and that's what we're after. But sometimes you just got to bite the bullet, and then you go forward.
Analysts say that biting the bullet no doubt refers to further staff redundancies. Telstra has cut over 12,000 positions since 2005, with a flow-on saving of over $420 million. Mr. Thodey said that the loss of customers was due partly to customers moving from Telstra fixed-line services to other carriers' mobile networks. A senior telecommunications analyst from stockbroking and asset management firm BBY spoke on government radio last week. Mr. Mark McDonald said that Telstra may have finally realised that it's out of touch with the expectations of many of its customers.
I think Telstra for many years has clung to an idea that it's a premium service provider. The stark reality, of course, is that while it was often saying that, the level of customer complaints was going up, and so it was becoming, as it were, less and less connected to the realities of the marketplace. I think the current management realises that is an unsustainable position and doing their best to turn it around.
Telstra shares closed up slightly on Friday at $2.92. To election news this week, the Liberal Party has announced its alternative to the National Broadband Network. In what's emerging as a key policy difference between the two major parties, the Liberals on Tuesday last week said they would build a cheaper, albeit slower alternative, which relied considerably more on wireless technologies than Labor's NBN. The Coalition's broadband and communications spokesman, Mr. Tony Smith, and the finance spokesman, Mr. Andrew Robb, announced the Coalition's plan at a press conference last week. The $6 billion scheme will use a mix of technologies including optic fibre, hybrid fibre coaxial, wireless and DSL to deliver services of at least 12 megabits per second to about 97% of the population. The proposed network speed falls a long way short of the government's promised 100 megabits per second to 99% of households. Industry analysts criticised the coalition's reliance on wireless technology, questioning where the necessary spectrum would come from. However, in an embarrassing interview with Kerry O'Brien on the ABC's 7:30 report, the opposition leader, Mr. Tony Abbott, became flustered when asked to explain details of his broadband proposal.
Do you know what peak speed is?
If you're going to get me into a technical argument, I'm going to lose it, Kerry, because I'm not a tech head, but we are offering 12 and up. And we think in
but you're
the
guaranteeing 12.
That's right. But in the vast majority of cases, it will be a lot more than that.
And in a win for Labor's NBN last week, the agency charged with the construction and deployment of the network said that end-user speeds of up to 1 gigabit per second would be enabled 10 times faster than the 100 megabits per second promised by Senator Conroy. NBNCo's chief executive, Mr. Mike Quigley, said he was trying to make sure people understood what it is that NBNCo is going to deliver. Mr. Quigley added that increasing the speed would not add to the $43 billion construction price and that the fibre could be upgraded to provide even faster speeds in coming years. In other news this week, Twitter has launched a tweet button for web developers. The purpose of this button is simple. Internet users who find a website they'd like to share can tweet the address simply by clicking a button on the website itself. This means that Twitterers will no longer have to copy and paste the address into Twitter and won't have to leave the website that they've found. The button itself triggers a pop-up box that immediately includes a shortened URL of the page or item to be shared. Twitter describes the process of adding the button to websites as simple and only requiring a few lines of code. Google's message to its Android users is clear: don't type when you can talk. Voice search lets users send texts, compose emails, navigate, create notes, and even set the alarm clock on your device by simply just speaking into it. The voice search application is part of Google's effort to improve the Android user interface and is currently available for handsets running version 2.2 of the Android operating system. This includes the HTC Evo, Nexus One, and Droid 2 smartphones. And an angry flight attendant in the United States has become something of an overnight internet folk hero. After an altercation with an obnoxious passenger, Mr. Stephen Slater unleashed a barrage of abuse over the aircraft's PA system, grabbed a beer from the drinks trolley, deployed the emergency chute, and slid down it to leave the plane. And in doing so, effectively tendered his resignation from airline JetBlue. Mr. Slater has since had his Facebook page flooded with messages of support, and people are now donating money for his legal defence. YouTube has been inundated with messages of support, songs written in tribute to Mr. Slater, and compilations of news articles. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Late last night, the Coalition announced it wouldn't be voting for an internet filter.
And you'd have a lot more of the screen filled up with just the background.
I got polled on the weekend.
What, someone hit you with a stick, Channel?
The incredibly stupid Channel 2 decision to put the news channel on HD.
I don't mean to digress too much, but
the day that you hear that, you can safely say it's dead and buried.
No,
it's not,
you can't.
Happen.
Your policy looks like it's not standing up to scrutiny.
We are. We're refused participation.
Hang on a minute.
Google Wave was a classic example of build it and they will come, except they didn't come.
Warlock, if you bought a new iPhone, you can ring up and tell us about the death grip.
I'll give you a clue. The stuff where the buildings were folding into each other was probably CGI.
You miss a line and you're Christmas. Sorry.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, good.
I find it very disappointing if you go to the cinema and the sound isn't up to scratch.
Stop eating the popcorn and you'll find it'll be right so much cheaper.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's good to be back in your radio. Hello, everybody. Andrew McComb here. Tech Talk Radio is what you're listening to. And in front of me, we have a full panel this evening. Someone who we had to reintroduce ourselves has finally rocked in. Our longtime Apple guru. I thought he was just laying low because of all the shenanigans that were going on out in Apple land there. JD, how are you?
AntennaGate and all.
That's
yes.
It. And the ITV. I mean, yes. Is that what they call it now?
Apparently.
Yeah. And they've lopped a few facilities up. But anyway, we'll talk about that later too. How are you going? Where have you been? Did you bring a note?
I did bring a note.
Excellent.
Yes, I managed to survive the flu and not get it, but the rest of the family did.
So, oh, okay. You shared it around, type of guy you are.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I never had it. So
oh, did you? Yeah. Oh, even better. Dr. Ron.
I'm excited.
Are you?
Yes.
It's the last week, isn't it?
It's the last week. It's the last week before the big day on Saturday.
Ah, yeah.
Very exciting.
What's going to happen? We're going to pull a rabbit out of our hat? You've been watching The Chaser?
Anything could happen. I have been
did
watching The Chaser.
Did you see Harold Holt fall down behind the in the pool like the octopus did? Very funny stuff.
It's good seeing The Chaser back doing what they do well.
Oh, I'm going to miss them. I hope they stay on after
political
the election.
Satire.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And the Mal Award. For those of you listening to us overseas, we're in the last week of our election campaigning. We've spoken about the Australian Labor Party's ideas and aspirations. And this week, at long last, we've got something to talk about when it comes to the Coalition, which is the other major party that's up for grabs. And it was a bit of a fizzle. But anyway, I'm sure this man on the end of our panel, Graham Callaghan, a man of few words, but when he says them, they're just pearlers, aren't they? How are you, Graham?
I'm very well, Andrew.
It's when you get on that soapbox, it just bang. It's fantastic. Anyway.
You were mentioned in dispatches during the week, Graham, in the Twitterverse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. People wanting you to run for Prime Minister, or Warlock was Warlock in our chat room tonight. He was going to run for Prime Minister only if you were going to be his deputy or something.
I'll just stay in the background and be an advisor.
You're going to be one of the faceless men, are you?
I could feed some policy up through the ranks, yeah.
If Conroy gets in, can you go and advise him? He needs a bit of help.
He really does.
If the others get in, well, they're beyond help, aren't they?
that's the thing, yes. Although he needs a lot of help, he's the lesser of two evils at the minute.
Well, exactly. All right. This is Tech Talk Radio. Tonight, as I say, if you're not interested in politics, just spool down the podcast a little bit. Probably about half an hour or so, and continue on there where Adam Turner's in this evening.
It is unfortunate that we do so much politics on the show.
No, but it's not. I love it.
Yeah, but it is necessary because there's such important technological issues coming up in the election.
Absolutely.
So, we need to talk about them and make sure that people understand the ramifications.
Also tonight, a bit of humour, Kerry O'Brien versus... Mr. Rabbit,
yes.
as he's been known as. It was probably the most hilarious television I've seen of the whole political campaign. We're going to bring you some audio grabs. You heard a bit Dr. Ron Teasted in the news back there before, so interesting stuff. All right, let's upward and onward, Dr. Ron. Get you at the Coro?
Absolutely.
I've got some Coro. Someone tweeted me something tonight and I've lost it.
What was I'll just say to everybody.
I've got a new handset and I can't work it out properly yet. I've lost my Twitter account.
You're telling me how good it was.
You can join us in the chat room if you're listening live. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come and join all of us, as well as Trent and Hell and Bouncing Bee, Super Laney, Warlock's there, we mentioned before. The Real Smoked Salmon is there, and Brad and Trevor. So,
hello, everybody.
Pop on in. Yes.
I wish I could.
Graham's battling with wireless issues at the moment. He's just done the big reboot and it hasn't fixed the problem.
Yeah, my computer won't connect to the network.
It happens to the best of us.
Maybe we've exceeded our connection limits with the new devices.
I've got new devices.
Yeah, exactly. This is probably another MAC address, the same as yours in the room.
If you're not listening live, you can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and you can see all our show notes there and you can participate in the post-show discussion. Correspondence this week, Matt via the TTR contact form says... I've been invited to a function to check out the new Panasonic Viera, is it? V-I-E-R-A?
Viera.
Full HD 3D Neo Plasma.
He bluffed his way in, didn't he?
I have listened to and read, yes, Adam Turner's take on it, but I need a bit more help so that I can bluff my way through. I've painted a picture of myself as a bit of a techno guru to weasel my way into the demo. I need a bit of jargon so that I can at least sound a bit knowledgeable on the subject of 3D televisions. Any help would be appreciated. By the way, thanks for Tech Talk. I always download it and listen to it. Thank you for the kind words, Matt. How can we help you? The Viera Full HD 3D Neo Plasma Television. Andrew, you'd have a couple of them?
No, I don't, actually. Sorry, not my brand of choice, I'm afraid.
Is this one of the passive 3D televisions or an active one?
Oh, they're all active these days.
Yeah.
Well, at the moment, anyway. Look, 3D TV's in its early stages. We've touched on this in previous podcasts and previous shows, so in a lot of respects, go and have a listen if you want a detailed explanation on them. But the things to look out for, obviously, is, I guess from a consumer point of view, television sets aren't all the same. You want something which is big and true HD. Bear in mind as well that if you're watching free-to-air 3D TV, you'll be looking at half-resolution pictures because that's how they do it. They need two channels, so they split the one channel into two, one for the left eye, one for the right eye, and that's what you're watching. There's probably four types of 3D. It's one great thing about 3D television that no one's actually ratified a standard yet. There's dual stream, left and right. You won't see that on free-to-air television. You won't see that in anything, really, apart from edit suites and cinemas.
What, dual stream?
Dual stream.
So they're taking up effectively two television
channels.
To bring you a left eye and a right eye.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Little bit of trivia, going back into the dark, dark history many, many, many decades ago, do you know that the first stereo radio broadcasts in Australia were done by using two AM radio stations?
Really? No, I didn't. Really?
Yeah. So you'd get two identical radios. You'd tune one of them to 3LO and the other one to 3AR. Put them on opposite ends of the mantelpiece.
And yes. Did they have country and western?
I think it might have been even earlier than that. They probably
one in each year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, the dual streaming back in stereo in really old technology.
There you go.
Your
wealth of information, Graham. I'm so glad to have
you
on the
show. Anyway, it's the equivalent of that. It's like, yeah, you'd have to put the left eye on channel 2 and the right eye on channel 31, and yeah.
Well, wasn't it ABC and ABC 2 effectively anyway?
No, right? because they share the same channel. They're like multi-channeling within the same channel. so you wouldn't be able to get two HD streams out of it.
That's a big ask for bandwidth in this country. So,
So you'd have to use the HD channel on the ABC's digital 2, and the HD channel on SBS perhaps as the other eye.
You could do if you were going to do real,
but you wouldn't. Never ever going to happen in this country.
Cinemas, where you're going to see it. Look, the other, and just briefly, I'll touch on it. The other three forms, you've got over under, you've got left and right, and you've got interlaced, are the three types of 3Ds that they're broadcasting.
In practice, these only have any effect that in between, that they're like something that gets converted into in between the cameras and the TV.
That's correct. But if you're watching Channel 40, did you ever watch it when it was on?
I probably saw it for a few seconds,
Okay, well, then you had two images, one on the left and one on the right-hand side of the screen.
And that's what you call side-by-side.
Side-by-side.
Yeah. Yep. And they were both sort of squished, so people were very tall and thin. And over-under would be the opposite of that. You'd have one picture over the other and everybody would be stretched, so they were really, really short and fat.
Correct. And then you got interlaced, is just a big blur.
Just look like a mess,
Yeah. So there you go. There's 3D. Actually, one thing I'll add to that. The active glasses will give you a headache. Basically, what happens is there's a transmitter on the television sets which talks to your glasses, which basically opens and shuts.
It's infrared, isn't it?
Yeah. And it opens and shuts the active glasses that you have. And I find them to be very annoying. And I have seen 3D TV, but made by the big manufacturers where you don't need glasses. So it's coming. You don't need glasses for it. But I was asked on ABC Radio, I think about 2 weeks ago when we were talking about this, is it here to stay on the small screen? And from a movie point of view, I don't think so, but from a games point of view, very much so. The Sonys, PlayStations, the PS2s, 3s, the Wiis, the Nintendos will all make good use of this little technology. Hopefully that's enough to get you into the Panasonic demo.
Bluff your way through the demo.
So we'll never see Home and Away broadcast every week in 3D. That just isn't going to happen.
Not Home and Away, no.
But
you never know.
But we might see the old movie pop up, like when Avatar or Inception comes to television, we might see them broadcast in 3D.
You may, but you've got to bear in mind that it will take up an extra channel of the free-to-air broadcasters, which means that, say, on, let's say, Channel 71 ran Avatar in normal 2D, and Channel 70 ran the 3D version side by side, for example, then you might see it as a simulcast. But it's a pretty interesting challenge for them.
Yes.
Matt, we hope that's enough for you to bluff your way through, and please give us some feedback after the demonstration. Let
so
us
you
know.
You can walk in and say, what? You need glasses?
Yeah. Is this over under or side by side? Is this a fad? I want to see the PS3. Connected up and running in 3D. I don't want to look at...
Yeah, there's also three different kinds of technologies. So there's the ones that need the active glasses, which is probably the ones you're going to see. There's the ones that have passive glasses, which are like you have in the cinema.
Which you won't see.
But that would be like in the cinema where you have the polarized glasses.
Yeah, the Real D, they call it.
Well, Real D is one technology, and then there's a different technology that they're using in IMAX, which uses different... The glasses are actually different. They're not compatible between the two. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did, actually. They're circular polarised.
The Real D are circular polarised in opposite direction, so clockwise and anti-clockwise, whereas in IMAX, they're at 45-degree angles, but, not circular. They're just... what's the opposite of circularly polarised? Horizontal or vertical, but they're not there at 45-degree angles.
Whatever that word is. I know what you're saying,
So the effect is that if you tilt your head on the side in IMAX, you lose the 3D effect. It goes all blurry. Whereas if you tilt your head on the side...
Stops people sleeping.
In the Real D cinemas with the big chains are using, then the image stays perfect because you can rotate it as far as you like. It still stays circular, it still stays clockwise and anti-clockwise.
Is one newer than the other? Is that an evolution?
I think the circular one is a newer variant of a very old idea, that's right.
But it's a
very clever idea. It's much, much more sensible.
And what you're seeing here is what happens with digital radio around the world. No common standard or...
DAB and DAB Plus.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. And this is where we're seeing 3D at the moment.
The other type of 3D TV that we really want to see is one where you don't need any glasses at all. You can just watch it and see 3D.
That's the one.
So that's what you'll be asking them about the future. You've done all the right things. You've listened to us. You've listened to Adam Turner. You know all the jargon.
Matt,
go and get some information and bring it back to us.
Go crazy. Go
Martin
get them.
Conquer.
Tim via email says, hi, guys.
Oh, we're still doing Coro.
Oh, yeah. We've got just
sorry,
the tip
so much
of
to
the
do.
Iceberg. Local guy, Ruslan Kogan's company, drew my attention during the week with some pretty incredible TV prices. Have a look at his website. He's put a link there to Kogan.com.au and the blog. I'll put the link up in the show notes.
He's been on Today Tonight.
Has he? Mm. It's really amazing, says Tim, how massive the difference is between what he's selling and what's being sold in stores. A lot of the savings are around 50%, which is just mind-boggling in my humble opinion. They use the same components as the big companies. The panels are made by either LG or Samsung, for example. Just thought this would be of some interest to all the Tech Talk listeners. Cheers, Tim.
I just want to add one thing to that. You get what you pay for.
Go and have a look at them. Have a look at them working in the stores before you make a decision. Don't buy sight unseen. Smoked Salmon, who is on the forum tonight, says, I saw this, and he sent a link there to a Gizmodo blog. The government may be looking at taxing downloadable applications, such as the Apple ones. I would imagine all others too, such as Android and Ovi, Nokia, etc. Interesting.
Well, our government.
Yeah, interesting, but unfortunately a lazy Swanee. And obvious revenue source, says Smoked. Nick Browell, who's a well-respected Australian technology journalist on Gizmodo, said in the blog post today, if you buy a game for your PC or gaming console, it has a rating from the Office of Film and Literature Classification. Unless it's been refused classification because of our country's primitive classification system, that is. But if you buy a game for your iPhone from the App Store, there's no such classification yet. So he says, Michael Bodie over at The Australian has discovered the government is aware of this loophole and is planning on closing it very soon. Apparently it costs developers between $470 and over $2,000 for their games to be classified by the OFLC.
Correct.
Given that of the 200...
Office of Film and Literature Classification.
That's the one. Given that of the 220,000 odd apps in iTunes, it's estimated that about one third of them are games. This means the government is missing out on somewhere between $34 and $149 million in classification revenue.
And the other thing too, with the OFLC, someone has to play it. Mm. Someone has to go through it. Some human. That's a lot of game playing. Get your applications in now if you're a gamer. Learn up on what's right and wrong and what's, you know, as long as there's no alcohol showing between certain hours, you're good to go.
Indeed. So the blog post says, no matter what happens, this is going to be an ugly situation that we haven't heard the last of. So thanks, Smoked, for bringing that to our attention.
Very valid, too.
It is. If you've got any correspondence?
I do.
Andrew, you've got a tweeted correspondence.
I do, but I'll find that later if I can work it out during the next break.
How to drive your new telephone, which
that'll
we need to,
bring a new
we need to hear that, about that as well.
Oh, absolutely. The Australian Information of Security Association, or AISIA, there is the Australian Representative Industry Body for the Information Security Profession, which basically, I must admit, I wasn't aware of these guys until one of their members rang up on our chat line. Our feedback number, which is 03-8682-8836, and left us a little message. Now, it's not for commercial use, this phone number. Don't start ringing up and sprouting your non-commercial and commercial wares. But this, I thought, was relatively interesting and worth a run.
I'm calling to let you know about the next Australian Information Security Association meeting in Sydney. AISA is a professional organisation with 1,000 members who are dedicated to the raising of awareness of IT security issues. We have branch representation in all states, and membership is open to anyone with an interest in IT security. We're having a branch meeting and membership drive this Wednesday, the 18th of August, at CSC Australia in Macquarie Park, New South Wales. We'll have presentations from Gabriel Eustachio and Julian Goodmanis from CSC on security testing of smart metering technology. And Kevin Connolly from ResMed will present on healthcare, a global perspective on data protection. We hope some Tech Talk Radio listeners are able to attend and join the organisation. For more information about what's happening in your state, just visit www.aisa.org.au. That's AISA.org.au, and click on the branch at the top of the landing page. Many thanks for Tech Talk Radio for the opportunity to get this message out to the listening public. Thank you.
So next Wednesday, if you're in Sydney, check it out. Let us know how you go. And I did have a look at their website. Very interesting. They're all over the place.
The Australian Information Security Association.
Yeah, that's
very good. If you're in Sydney and you've got the opportunity to drop past, then you should take advantage of that.
All right, any more Coro, Dr. Ron?
No, I think that'll do us.
All right, I'm going to try and find that tweet fairly shortly. I've lost it. Yes, but just briefly, I have finally cast off the Apple shackles, and I've now moved across to the... I've now moved across into the land of the droid, having recently...
Welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you. Recently acquired one of the Dream devices, which is a dream to get
you've
going.
You've gone absolutely from one extreme to the other. You've gone from the closedest of closed... closedest? The most closed of closed systems, being the Apple
otherwise a closet system.
To the open source world of Android.
I have indeed. And I haven't looked back. The only thing I might say just briefly from the outset is there's two types of Dream. One is for the Australian market and one is for the international market, as you'd expect.
Desire.
The Desire.
Yes.
Yes. And what I would say to you is if you do want to use it in the countryside, in the regional parts of Australia,
use the Telstra
Next
G network.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Different firmware, different hardware, well worth the buy. But if you're just
you have to put up with all of Telstra's add-ons.
That's the trade-off.
You're absolutely insane. I've used one that's... completely batty.
That is the trade-off. I'm sorry, but there's not much you can really do about that.
It's like when you open a web browser and the Google toolbar's installed, turning on a Telstra-branded phone, isn't it?
Well, it's a lot worse than that.
saying something.
Every time you create a new mail, it prompts you as to whether you want to use the Telstra My Inbox tool or whether you want to use Exchange Mail.
Well, you just set the default as Exchange Mail, surely, and the prompt goes away.
It prompts you every single damn time.
Thought you'd lost hair this week. You've been playing with one such device, have you?
Yes.
Mm.
Anyway, so there you go. Good use of technology. Works really, really well. Very fast.
What version of Android?
2.2 Froyo.
2.2 Froyo.
Yep, latest and greatest. With the new speaking capabilities, which is very good. You don't have to push buttons on it. You just push the... Well, you do. You have to push the button to speak to it. And then you can say, navigate to, or call Dr. Ron.
Doesn't have a... keyword, can't you activate the speech system by speech as well?
I'm sure you can. I haven't worked that bit out yet. I've only had it for 2 days.
Is that what I talked about in the news, voice search?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's good.
But I'm really enjoying not being constricted to little square icons on an Apple device. It's nice having long ones and rectangular ones and short ones and the ability to change the face of icons, and just it's a nice GUI. Okay. Battery's just as bad as the other one, so I don't think
they're any
better.
Now, my old Nokia phone can do voice dialing. I press a button and I say the name and it looks it up, and you don't have to train it. It just tries to recognise by the spelling of the entries in the address book.
Mm-hmm.
But my problem is I've got lots of organisations that are in there by their organisation initials. So I end up trying to get it to look up things by saying...
And how does that work for you, Graham?
Must be really funny in the car next to him. That's all I can say.
That's going in the promo.
Absolutely.
Did you say Abu Dhabi? Is that what it says to you?
No, it pops up three choices, and occasionally one of them's the one I want.
Whenever I say call Dr. Ron, it always tries to ring Dr. Graham over here. I'm not sure what the deal is, but it happened on both. Maybe it's my speech impediment. It happened on both brands of telephones. So I don't know what the deal is there.
Smoked in our chat room says, stop talking Wookiee.
it did sound
like Chewbacca then for a brief moment in time. Yes, well, I'm glad you're enjoying the new operating system and the new handset. I'm very envious.
It's a very fast device.
That's, that Google voice search isn't available on the old version that I've got. You've got 2.2.
Graham's lost it over there.
Graham, yeah.
Sorry, they're making fun of me in the chat room.
They are indeed. No, I'm really pleased that you've made the switch and that you're happy.
Well, so far so good. Yes, it's there are a few, like any change in technology, there's habit-forming issues that you have to get around, and there's the old love-lost, love-found type sort of scenarios that go on with applications. But on the whole, the main apps that I wanted, which I used on the Apple device, the iPhone, are available for the Droid. So it was just a download and off you go again with a cost of a few shekels. So it wasn't bank-breaking sort of stuff. And then, of course... it just works. It's really fast and all good. Although I did lose some icons and they're very hard to find, but once you know how, they come back, which is good.
Ah, very good. And what's happened to the handset formerly known as the iPhone that you were using? Has that gone to a family member or has it just gone to the junk box? Or?
No, probably the junk box by the time the family members had it.
Were you using a 3GS?
Yes.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. Look, nothing wrong with them. And there was a four in the studio tonight in the show prior to us. And anyway, Adam's got a lot on the death grip tonight too, which you can hear about. And when I say that, we're not going to try and bore everyone to tears. He took a new iPhone 4 and he did the death grip on all of the major carriers in certain places. And he's going to tell you what happened which is pretty good. Now, let's talk politics. This is Tech Talk Radio. The time is going at a ferocious rate as everyone in the studio looks at the clock. chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you'd like to come along and say good day. The chat room is filling up. And, of course, if you'd like to have your say, you can ring up on our feedback number, which is 0386828836. Say good day to our automated service. We'll put you to air, providing you say all the right things. Now, the coalition, which is the Nationals and the Liberal Party, finally released last week their ITC flavour, formula, whatever it is that they're going to try and do the country run the country by, should they be elected. And, well, let's hear what they had to say.
Today we announce a plan to deliver faster and affordable broadband.
Unlike the government's broadband scheme, we will not be risking somewhere between $43 and $86 billion of taxpayers' money on the creation of a white elephant. All of this today is about showing that there is a much better way.
We are committing up to $2.75 billion with the expectation of leveraging at least another $750 million from the private sector to create an open access optic fibre backhaul network that telecommunications companies can access.
Like the government's proposal, it covers 97% of Australians, 97% of all Australians, with speeds between 30 and 100 megabits per second. We will not be creating a bureaucratic, stodgy, cumbersome and unresponsive government monopoly. All of the key population centres in Australia will have in their proximity the fibre which will enable 100 megabits per second.
So there you go. In a nutshell, that's the coalition's policy, which was launched by Mr. Smith. And
now, did he say it was only a backhaul network? It's not actually a network that's going to get to the end user?
Well, yeah. Backhaul played a major role in it. And from my understanding of it, they're basically going to rely on the commercial organisation's current abilities to roll it out, i.e. Telstra and other telcos. And they're going to do a bit of work in the backhaul section, which is where they were going to spend that money. So
they're only going to get it as far as the local exchange,
correct,
or something like that.
That's it.
And then because Telstra, a private company, owns all the cable pits and cable and all that sort of guff between the exchange and the houses, how is anyone else other than Telstra going to get it from the exchange to the house?
Good question.
And how are they going to use any technology that's faster than this ADSL 2+
debacle? The thing that sticks in my mind is that this is a revolution that the country needs to have. You know, I think Dr. Ron said it across the course of time too. 100 years ago, they were just rolling out copper. Now, down the track, we need to be rolling out glass. Copper, yes, lasted us 100 years, and glass is going to last us probably considerably longer.
Well, my house isn't connected to a broadband network. It's connected to a telephone network. I can run what we call broadband over the telephone network to a point, but it's not what it was designed to do. We
and
need
it can't
infrastructure.
Grow.
That's right. It can't grow. It can't give me any faster or give me any more bandwidth than I currently have at the moment. We need infrastructure there which will accommodate broadband from the ground up.
That's the key to it, Dr. Ron. And we need the infrastructure. If we're going to use existing copper/fibre technology, look,
the Liberal Party plan does not provide a way to do that.
The current telcos, right, have been at it for 20 years, and what have we got to show?
Well, quite frankly, it's in Telstra's interest not to improve things. It's in Telstra's interest to keep us in the dark ages.
Absolutely.
Because they own the dark ages.
Senator Stephen Conroy, who is the spokesperson for the current government, here's his response.
For the Labor Party.
For the Labor government, yes. Here's his response.
It will consign Australia to the digital dark ages. The Coalition's 19th century policy in 12 years will shut down the NBN and destroy 25,000 jobs. This is a complete sellout of regional and rural Australians. And the National Party especially should be ashamed of themselves.
Yes. if the National Party, who represents most of regional Australia.
This is a new experience, agreeing with Senator Conroy.
It's hard, isn't it? I was just saying that before, but like, you know, traditionally at Tech Talk Radio, we've been fairly critical of what some of the government has planned with the internet filter and things like that. But I don't think we've ever been critical of the National Broadband Network. I think it's always been something
This is the one they got
everyone
right.
Everyone here has believed in.
If they could actually deliver it, though.
Well, they're starting to now. Mm. This is the thing. They're turning it on in Tassie.
You believe there's going to be problems there?
Well, they've taken a very long time. An entire term.
To get around to doing maybe
two or three
homes in Tasmania hooked up. Yeah.
That's a long time.
It is. But one of the Tech Talk Radio colleagues in the office, Brian, lives in one of the new estates, South Morang. He will be able to order. Well, he has ordered. He's just waiting for it to be connected for them. I think 100 meg down and 10 up for less than I'm paying for my measly 22 meg down, which I tried today.
And is that with optic fibre into his house?
Yes, it is.
Fantastic. That's what we need.
Absolutely. And people go, why do we need this? Well, we may not need it right now, but in a few years' time, chances are we will. For whatever, you know, free-to-air television and free-to-air radio and all those broadcasting services are going to be delivered via the piece of glass that comes up the street.
No, they're not. Absolutely not. They're not even going to be the same services. They're not going to deliver the free-to-air service as it is today over the optic fibre. They're going to have video on demand.
Well, that too.
The
but
new
I...
series of the latest and greatest will be released, an episode on, you know, that'll be released every day at or every week on a Wednesday at 8:30. And you'll be able to download and watch it when you want to.
Look, I agree with you, Graham. But also, having traversed the United States, no one's got a TV antenna on the roof anymore.
It all comes by cable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, good news from the... one can think there's a conspiracy theory here, but apparently they've upped the 100 megabits to gigabit now on the NBN. And that also got launched in Tasmania last week.
1, 2, 3, push.
Here we are. The future is here, and the future is this national broadband investment. I very much welcome as well the fact that the National Broadband Network Company has announced that we will achieve higher speeds on the national broadband network than initially envisaged.
NBN Co. will provide speeds on the National Broadband Network fibre product of 1 gigabit per second. That is an increase on the 100 megabits per second that we've previously announced. And 1 gigabit is 10 times faster than 100 megabits.
It's very hard to take seriously a government which suddenly pulls yet another technological rabbit out of a hat just because it's under enormous pressure in the closing stages of an election campaign. I mean, this idea that, hey, presto, we are suddenly going to get 10 times the speed from something that isn't even built yet, I find utterly implausible.
And the reason he finds it implausible is because he doesn't understand the technology. Everybody who knows what fibre is understands that, yep, the reason for putting fibre in is because it can expand. You can use, you know, more and more bandwidth.
Look, Freak in our chat room says, isn't that because they still don't know the theoretical limit of fibre optics, so no one knows how fast it will actually be? Well, I think he's hit the nail on the head there. I mean, in laboratory tests, in ideal circumstances, with optic fibre, they've run up to, what, 400, 500 terabits per second.
But it's got nothing to do with the cable.
It's got nothing to do with the cable. That's right, JD. It's to do with the switching equipment and other considerations. The actual piece of cable that comes into our house, if we have optic fibre into our house, lies in the ground for 100 years.
It's a strand of glass that you shine light down, and it's the light that carries the information.
That's exactly it, Graham. So if that's in the ground for 100 years, just like a piece of twisted copper is, and we're still using that to our house in the year, you know, 2100, then
all
well
you
and good.
We'll change the equipment on each end of it, and you can do another 10 times, another 100 times, another 1,000 times, who knows?
That's it. But if we leave the infrastructure as it is at the moment, we can't go beyond this appalling fraud band that we have here.
Yes.
Graham, you touched on it earlier in respect to the fact that the opposition, the Liberal Party, the National Party, in particular the two spokespeople, Mr. Smith and Mr. Rabbit, don't actually know what they're talking about. This is becoming quite evident, and it's becoming quite frustrating to people who have the slightest understanding about how fibre optics work. For example, you know, questions that just don't get answered correctly at press conferences is one. Here's an example.
Well, I accept, Kerry, that not everyone is going to like our system. As I said, I think we can do something that will be good for a lot less price. Our system will give Australians national broadband, but it won't be nationalised broadband, and it won't depend on just one fibre technology.
Your communication spokesman Tony Smith made plain at the press club today that he would only guarantee a peak speed. You talk about speeds of up to 100 megabits per second. He would only guarantee a peak speed of 12 megabits per second under your plan. Do you know what peak speed is?
If you're going to get me into a technical argument, I'm going to lose it, Kerry, because I'm not a tech head, but we are offering 12 and up, and we think in...
But you're guaranteeing 12.
That's right, but in the vast majority of cases, it will be a lot more than that. A lot faster.
Well, are you sure about the... Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is. It's quite an easy concept to understand. Peak speed is the best speed at which you can download material, usually when people are least likely to be using the internet, like at midnight. At other times, when there is congestion on the net, the speed will be much lower than that. So how can you say, as a matter of course, that the speeds your system will deliver will actually, more often than not, be much more than 12.
Well Kerry, I take your point that if you want to drag me into a technical discussion here, I'm not going to be very successful at it.
Do you agree that that's not terribly technical to understand? Peak speed is the speed when the fewest people are using the net, which is in the dead of night, to borrow one of your expressions.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that our system is going to cost vastly less, but it will be there quicker than Labor's system, and it doesn't put all Australia's eggs in the basket of one particular technology.
So there you go. That was Kerry O'Brien on ABC 7:30 Report last Wednesday night, taking Mr. Abbott to task about broadband speeds, which is basically fundamental, I would have thought, to any form of debate over rolling out new infrastructure. How's it going to work? How fast is it going to go? And it just seems quite disappointing to me as a technical consumer that a government which is up for election potentially does not understand or appreciate the ramifications of the decisions that it's about to make.
Yeah, it's perfectly clear that he really hasn't had much of a briefing about the nuts and bolts of things. We don't expect the communications minister to be a communications engineer. That's far too much to ask. But it is possible to have an understanding of the way the technology works that anybody can grasp if they bother to do the research and get the right advice.
And certainly for the couple of days around a major announcement like this,
correct,
you'd expect them to be on top of it. And you know, if they didn't know it in a couple of weeks, you might sort of understand. But when the announcement's just been made, they should know it.
I think there's a lot to be said for the devil you know and the devil you don't know at the moment. And let's just face it, we're technical commentators. Adam Turner in the chat just said something absolutely wonderful, said, let's not put all our eggs in fibre in case something faster than light comes along.
Yeah, well, you never know. Sensible commentary there from Adam Turner in the chat room.
Absolutely. Yes. Come along and say your piece there. I notice there's been a lot of newcomers jump in there since I last looked across there on the other side of the desk. But look, it's worth considering that we're about to vote on Wednesday. When is it? Saturday. For the federal election, I'll get it right in a minute. Yeah. And I'm sounding a bit like Tony Rabbit, aren't I? Anyway, but this is one of the major choices that this country has to look at. And without wanting to, you know, we've given both sides of politics equal say. We've even shot down some of the stuff that Mr. Conroy's come out with in previous times and praised him for that, you know, matter of speaking as well. It's worth considering that if you're voting based on an NBN or connecting the country type sort of thing, like putting railways through, like putting copper through and major arterial roads and things like that.
Well, this is
infrastructure.
It is infrastructure,
which
is it's the equivalent of building the railways in the 19th century. It's the equivalent of building the phone network in the 20th century. It's the equivalent of building the road networks.
And everything is dependent on our ability to communicate effectively. It doesn't matter if the big thing in the election for you is health. Then it's going to be affected by the broadband network.
Exactly.
The big thing for you is education. It's going to be affected by, you know, what our broadband future is. If the big thing for you is national security, it all comes back to
business,
our ability to
trade,
communicate.
Everything.
Exactly right. We need this infrastructure. We really do.
All right. This is Tech Talk Radio and our election eve edition. If you're listening to this after next Sunday, well, you probably know the outcome anyway, and we'll find out what happens fairly shortly. But
Adam's look, also concerned about the NBN if it's running on light technology, if emails to Queensland will take an extra an hour because of daylight saving in the summer.
Because the light's fading the curtains.
To those who are looking for a faster technology than light, faster than light communications, let's just spare a little bit of a thought to the concept of quantum entanglement.
Oh, that's what they use on WiMAX, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope
no,
not.
That's just entanglement.
Because <laughs> <laughs>
that was what they were going to roll out, the Liberal coalition government, before they lost the last election. They were touting with the WiMAX technologies, which... well, if here we go, not wanting to start a rant over here, but let me just use the words radio frequency and speed in one sentence and let Graham take it from here.
Yes, and this is one of the big problems, is that this is still the kind of technology that the Liberal National Plan is depending on. Is, you know, they're only building a network to the local exchange or to a central point. They're not building it all the way to the consumer, so they are relying on wireless and so on. And radio frequencies is such a scarce resource, so incredibly scarce, and there's no way you can build more when you run out. So, it's just not the way to do your primary delivery.
But the original intention, though, was to use WiMAX under the old plan to cover off some of regional Victoria where cabling just wasn't cost-efficient.
Mm.
And that's probably a reasonable thing if you plan it appropriately.
Yeah, but only where it's really, really not.
What's wrong with mobile broadband? Like, can I just say, I went to the mountains.
If you use it, you know what's wrong with it.
Well, no, I did use it on the weekend. I went up to the snowfields here in Victoria, and I found myself in the bottom of a little logging town called Noogee, which is miles from a lot of places, but it's a logging town. It's nestled in the valley of the bushlands of Victoria.
Yeah.
I got, as I said to all you guys when I was pretty surprised, I got 6.6 megabits per second down on my Next G sitting in a log cabin by the side of a creek.
Well, that's faster than I've ever got on my Next G in Melbourne.
Yeah, but this is...
But Andrew was probably the only user in the whole cell.
Yeah. Exactly. I've never been the only user in a mobile broadband cell, which is hanging off one of our providers'
networks. I went and spent the money to get the fastest available modem, which I'm using now because my Wi-Fi won't work, the fastest available modem on the Telstra Next G, and I still get woeful speeds, like 3 megabits per second or less, even though it's capable of, you know, 20 or higher.
Well, you're about, 10, 12 Ks out of the central business district of Melbourne at the moment. What speeds are you getting?
I'll do a speed test and let us know. Even when I am in the city, in the centre of Melbourne, like today I was working just barely north of Melbourne, opposite the Flagstaff Gardens, and yeah.
It's because everybody else
was getting no better speeds.
Everybody's got these new Fandangle PDA things, these you know, smartphones, and of course they all want to be connected all of the time, and as a result they're continuously chatting, and of course when you've got thousands of people sharing one cell, it's going to pull the overall speed down. That's just the nature of the beast. That's what's going to happen. But if you're out in the rural sticks, you know, like I was on the weekend, to those places where potentially the glass is not going to run, then certainly mobile broadband would have to be an option, even if it's subsidised by the government and the NBN.
But I think WiMAX provided extra coverage. Like, it was the distance argument. You don't have to have as many cells to cover a long area. Not that it matters anymore, because it's all gone.
Yes, indeed. All right, this is Tech Talk Radio. Just before we go, as I say, we're talking about the coalition offering for this election for communications to take us into the future. And they're offering us a high-speed network, I use the word high-speed loosely, of 12 to 100 megabits per second to 97% of households using a combination of the existing HFC cables, DSL and fixed wireless. That is delivery using current technology, which is in place right now. The cost of this program is going to be $6.315 billion over 7 years, which is considerably less than what the incumbent, the Labor government, is offering with the $43 billion national broadband network. Now, once again, this policy of the coalition is based on a $2.75 billion nationwide competition fiber optic backbone, which means everybody can come along and use it. This is going to be involving both public funding and leveraging private investment, that is from other large corporations, including telcos. And this is going to provide the backhaul fibres with an open access regime. Okay, that pretty much sums it up in a lot of respects. We've got that to choose from, or you've got the Labor Party's one to choose from this weekend.
One thing which Mr. Tony Smith announced as well, which...
Who?
Yes, quite. He was the Coalition's broadband and communication spokesman.
Mr. Conroy nailed him in the press the Canberra press club thingy. Did you see the sweat coming down his face?
He was under the pump, wasn't he?
I have a lot more respect now for Mr. Conroy, but that's my personal opinion.
One thing that Mr. Smith announced, which was met with some praise, was that the Coalition would spend $750 million on a fixed broadband optimisation grants program. Now, this, he explained, was to overcome technical restrictions with ADSL that currently prevents, he said, 1 million households from using ADSL. The decision received praise from some industry analysts who said it would be a cost-effective way to offer timely broadband to significant numbers of people using existing infrastructure. Of course, that it would only be a stopgap solution to try and maximise ADSL where it's currently limited, but that would be a cheap and immediate thing that the Coalition would do.
But surely there's something you can do around legislation. Just like they're turning off analogue TV under legislation and moving to digital TV, surely you can say, well, we're going to turn off ADSL, we're going to move to fibre as of a certain date, and any new...
But even still, the draw of the faster broadband has certainly got to have its appeals. And, of course, they'll put other services on the fibre that would not be supported, I would have thought, on a copper-based network.
We've got to be careful, because then you talk about being consumer-driven rather than government-driven, so it's a bit of a paradigm shift. But
there's certainly a move to not run the old technology into new estates, into new developments. So where you build a new housing estate, you run fibre in rather than running in copper telephone lines. So that's going a little bit in the direction you're talking.
Like what Andrew was describing with Brian at Tech Talk Radio headquarters. I mean, he's getting optic fibre onto his new house on a new housing estate.
You've been to our new headquarters. It's impressive, isn't it?
It is. Very good.
Yeah. Anyway. Sorry, I just thought I'd throw that in. Just briefly, before we go to the break, also the Coalition, in some of its policy unveiling in the course of the last week, $120 million is going to the school's ICT scheme, which is, you remember how Labor was going to have laptops in schools for kids? Well, this is their answer to that, the Coalition.
Right.
Now, it's a $120 million program of grants for technological improvements at schools. And those schools will be able to apply to the school's technology assessment panel. I thought they were getting rid of bureaucracy, but obviously not, for up to a $50,000 grant.
It takes a lot of bureaucracy to get rid of bureaucracy.
In funding. Yes, it does.
Oh, huge amount.
Yes, Minister.
The money was intended to support new and future teaching and learning approaches, just not high-speed broadband, including the integration of ICT and multimedia technologies. If you've ever been to a local government school at the moment, have you seen the interactive whiteboards all these teachers use?
Fantastic. Yeah, we have them in our office as well. Yep. They're great.
Yep, so there you go.
What do you mean interactive whiteboards? What do they do that a normal whiteboard does
not?
You
work in a government department. You should know these
things. We have sticks of chalk and pieces of slate.
Yes, I've seen yours.
I know. Okay. Yes.
Imagine a whiteboard on a wall.
I'm imagining a whiteboard.
Okay. Now, hanging above it is a projector that projects
just like
down.
Just like a video projector.
It's
like
a video projector, but it's like just above it. It's got a very clever lens on it, so it projects down onto the whiteboard.
Okay. So now, using the whiteboard as a screen.
Now, the whiteboard's also touch sensitive.
Oh, okay.
So you can drawing it with your finger. And
it's
you
like
have
a big Wacom tablet on the wall, Dr. Ron.
Yep. And it's also probably got speakers and a big camera sitting beside it, so it can do video conferencing on it as well.
But it'll also have multiple coloured styluses, which means you can draw on it with a stylus in the colour. So you pick up your red pen and
like
it draws red.
Like your red whiteboard marker.
Hmm. Yep. Right, okay.
And in fact, some versions of it, you actually use a whiteboard marker.
Yes.
That's fantastic technology.
And can you then hit print? Yep. And it prints out what
you can.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yes, you can.
Yep. No, it's great technology.
I like it.
Yeah,
I
want to go back to school. There's so much more fun they have these days.
There's a lot of fun to play with.
For work. I mean, forget at school.
So we had a teacher at our school that used to throw dusters that were loaded up with chalk dust if you weren't concentrating.
They come with an eraser. They come with an eraser.
So you can still throw things at students.
You can.
Okay, that's all right.
Let's get a lightsaber now.
Is that what they do? How's it going?
Oh, no.
There's another grab for the promo. Yeah. I was going to talk about something else too, but you've completely thrown me now. Oh, yes, here we go.
Here we are.
I put the wrong sheet down.
All together now.
The Coalition has also announced, and so has the Greens, actually, a $100.5 million cyber safety plan. So, once again, the Coalition, over 4 years, cyber safety plan that would require ISPs to promote free PC-based internet filters. In policy documents released, it pledged $60 million to PC-based filtering, $10 million this financial year, $20 million in the 11-12 year, and $15 million per year after that.
Not enough. side by side with that, you need to do education. You need to do loads and loads of education. You need to teach people how to be safe online. Just software can't do it without teaching the people.
Well done. And finally, before we do take a break, because we need to come up for air in a moment, we've got Adam Turner coming up after this. Business leaders unimpressed by the Coalition's broadband plans. Member of the Trans-Tasman Business Circle have slammed the Coalition's plan for Australian broadband, arguing that higher connection speeds and greater regulation of Telstra are essential to the business community. So there you go. I think that's what you were saying too before, Graham. You were saying,
probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds like something I'd agree with.
Absolutely.
Oh, all right. Dear.
So think carefully before you go into that funny little room.
Yes, it's next not just for nerds anymore. This is about the future of Australia.
Don't just tick all the boxes.
Why not? Are you gonna vote above the line? Are you gonna put all the numbers in the boxes? Gonna go backwards to forwards? Who you hate the most to who you like the most from 60 to 1 above
the
line?
Yeah, I might. You do that below the line, don't you? You put like 60 to 1 and then above the line
above the line you vote for the party. This is for the upper house, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, the Senate.
Yes.
Yes. Watch out, Mr. Conroy. he's in the Senate, isn't he? All right.
He was.
We should put... no, we shouldn't. It's all right. Press play.
Okay.
We should... I was going to say, we should pressing TikTok out of vote cards.
No.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03 8682 8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03 8682 8836. That's 03 8682 8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
There's a humdinger. Rip Schneider.
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective. Connected.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbelievable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Okay, during the break... Oh, during the break, Graham has done some tests on the NextG network. And
I did a speedtest.net test on my NextG that I was complaining about how slow it is.
Yeah, and how slow was it, Graham?
How slow is it, Graham? How hard done by are you?
I'm very hard done by. I got a ping time of 46 milliseconds. I got a download speed of 22.4 megabits per second and an upload speed of 2.3 megabits per second.
Now that's faster than I get on my cable at home.
It's faster than I get on my ADSL 2 Plus at home.
After whinging and carrying on, I think you owe Mr. Thodey an apology.
Telstra, you're doing exceptionally well in Box Hill.
They're pretty phenomenal speeds on NextG.
I've never seen it perform like that when I've needed it in anger at work, but... You know, it proves the network can do it.
They might just listen to us and tweak it, especially on Monday nights.
Yes.
Oh, you might have done that. Someone
in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne.
Yeah. So someone's hanging off a cell phone tower as we speak, making sure that we get good speed.
They say
the
maximum is 42, and in the perfect world, you're never going to get that. So I reckon what you've done there is pretty exceptional.
Yeah.
If they can roll that out in regional side of stuff.
If I could get those speeds all the time, I'd use this at home instead of my ADSL.
Just don't go into the city. That's probably the easiest thing.
That's where I work.
Now, maybe this has got something to do with it. Telstra is warning ISPs to expect aggressive competition. Now, you might have recalled a few weeks back that...
Yeah, Telstra's version of aggressive competition is downright predatory pricing.
Yeah, well, that's basically what they're doing, and they're becoming, as I think...
Oh, yeah, selling at retail for less than they sell at wholesale to their competitors.
Yeah, well,
which is,
bring it on. It's good for the consumer.
No, it's not.
Yeah, come on. As Dr. Ron said in the opening piece tonight, that the rot, I think it was called. Was it the rot? Maybe words to that effect of customers moving away from Telstra because it was perceived to be a, how should one say, a luxury item, you get what you pay for with them?
If you were a Telstra shareholder on Friday week, you would have lost money. Anybody who was holding Telstra shares lost money. $2.82, the lowest it's ever been.
Mm.
Well, yeah. It was virtual money, though.
Yeah, you only lost money if you sold them.
Well, lost value. Let me say you've lost value off your stocks there.
Perceived value.
Anyway, the 240 gig ADSL, broadband package that Telstra did, which is what you were talking about there, Graham, in their aggressive undercutting of pricing.
Yes.
It looks like iiNet is going to follow suit and offer the same sort of pricing. So I guess this is the marketplace working. But nonetheless, Telstra...
I wonder if they're losing money doing that.
To know their infrastructure is
they're
in.
They're probably not making a lot anyway.
But isn't this where Telstra has to focus in its new playing field now that they've lost their, with the NBN co buying all their back-end equipment, they're now becoming, or having to focus on retail and now becoming competitive in this market?
But they still mustn't sell at retail for less than they sell at wholesale to their competitors.
No, I agree with that pricing policy, yeah. But are they potentially going to drop the price down, have little margin in it for their competitors?
They can have as little margin between the wholesale and their retail price as they like, as long as they keep the wholesale and the resale separate.
But you look at other competitors like Internode and iiNet that have their own networks. Surely it's market forces.
Market forces to some degree, but no matter, even if you've got competitors with their own equipment in the exchanges, then they're still dependent on the Telstra local loop.
They are, which they've got legislation to gain access to.
But still priced by Telstra and priced in a way that's uncompetitive.
$11.
Well, how does that... If you add up the wholesale price of what Telstra sell, a wholesale ADSL 2 Plus service,
mm-hmm.
and the retail price they sell it for, and the loop access price, and you do the adding up, they're...
Well, yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
It doesn't make sense.
If you're a reseller of Telstra service, yes, it doesn't make sense. But if you're a provider of your own DSLAMs and things like that, then potentially...
It still doesn't make sense.
Well, it makes a little bit more sense.
You know, it's clear that they're not charging themselves what they're charging their competitors.
And why would you if you're a commercial business?
Absolutely. Anyway, so there's a level of...
This is the evil of having such a... such vast vertical integration of Telstra from pits and cables and ducts in the street all the way up to
service
selling the online music store.
Yeah, but the ducts are going.
But they're not gone yet.
No.
And under some plans for the future, they won't go.
Well, we'll see what happens, will we? Anyway, Telstra Chief David Thodey said today that Telstra would consider the impact of retail price shifts on its wholesale customers and that its pricing behaviour wasn't irresponsible, according to the boss there at Telstra.
Oh, Telstra says that they're not behaving irresponsibly. That's nice.
Yeah, well, what happened to them in court the other day? When they denied access to their competitors? Oh, sorry. There was no remorse. They couldn't care less.
They got a massive whack.
Got a slap on the wrist with a wet tram ticket.
Do they have tram tickets? I didn't think they did anymore. No, but in a lot of respect...
Was it really a massive whack?
No, it wasn't. They could have made up that 18.5 discounted 30% off because they were good boys.
Hang on, what? 18, how much was it? 18.5 million, was it?
5 million, I think it was.
How does that compare with the Telstra's turnover?
Well, exactly, Graham. That's just basically... people's overusage of their cap on their broadband plan in probably one day. So, it's not going to take too long.
You're right, Andrew. Yeah, $18.5 million. They were fined by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission for anti-competitive behaviour.
Yep, slap on the wrist.
No, allegedly they were, and that's what was found to have been happening.
Mm. Now, disputed bills are saddling Telstra with a $90 million debt, and apparently it's all self-inflicted, according to Roy Crozier from IT News. Telstra incurred as much as $90 million in self-inflicted bad debts in the past financial years, caused largely by customers that disputed and didn't pay expensive bills, which I know a few. So obviously, it's like one of those other things out there. People know you've all had the Telstra bill shock. And how about the other, there's another article that I saw today, and I don't know if I can lay my hands on it just quickly, but there's a, how the government was touting to have a cap on excessive bills where they disconnect you for Yeah, well, Telstra are not going to abide by that. They're going to put it out to pasture and check with their customers to see if they want that.
They're just going to rack it up and rack it up.
Yeah, see if they want to actually do that. I read that in passing today, so just check that one out, I guess, if you're passing. But anyway. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're running incredibly late tonight because there's been lots to talk about. We don't have elections every other day. Adam Turner is our regular, and he put the iPhone 4 through its paces during the course of the week. He took it down to the local underground car park and a few other things like that.
Now, he's done some death grip field trials.
He has. Now, some time ago, Dr. Ron, in a previous radio station, you put a phone in a fridge.
This will be a while ago. Oh, yes, I did.
Oh, the world-famous Tech Talk Radio fridge experiment.
Dr. Ron fridge experiment.
Adam, yes. Adam has one-upped you on this, I'm afraid.
What the hell's he done?
Well, yes, you'll have to wait and find out. Here he is.
I think I know.
Week's View from the Couch, one-upping Dr. Ron.
There's a lot of talk about the iPhone 4 and the death grip, so I decided to put it to the test. My findings? Aussies can drop calls due to the iPhone 4 death grip, but only if they're starting with a really poor signal. A lot was made of the iPhone 4's reception issues when it was first launched in the US. The dreaded death grip, caused by holding the phone in your left hand and touching different parts of the external antenna, triggered a media frenzy which saw Apple eventually offer customers a free iPhone case to alleviate the problem. Apple's US mobile partner AT&T is renowned for its flaky network, so the severity of the death grip was always going to vary between countries and networks. To put the death grip to the test in Australia, I set myself up with an iPhone 4 and micro SIM cards from four of the country's top mobile network providers, Telstra, Optus, Vodafone and Three. Out in the burbs, I've never had major mobile reception issues, so I set about finding ways to test out the iPhone 4 death grip. It's worth mentioning that with the iOS 4 software update, Apple has stripped out the iPhone field test mode that lets you monitor signal strength and other network connections. It's just so typical of Apple's approach to dealing with customers' concerns. I'd say the whole death grip backlash was triggered less by the actual problem and more by Apple's arrogance in dealing with the issue. Anyway, sitting on my kitchen table, the iPhone's reception varies between 3 bars on the 3 network and 5 bars on the Telstra network. Pick up the iPhone in your left hand and it's very easy to accidentally death grip it, knocking 2 or even 3 bars off the reception strength. Gripping the phone tightly, I could get Telstra down to 2 bars and the others to 1 bar, but I could never lose service or cause a call to drop out on any of the networks. That last bar is a persistent little bugger. Logic suggests that starting with a poor signal would increase the chances of an actual dropout. As tempting as it is to trek across the country in search of poor network coverage, it's not all that practical. Instead, I decided to seek out a few local reception black spots. First stop, the car park under the local supermarket, a spot where I've had reception issues in the past. All but Telstra are wavering between 1 and 2 bars, while the Big T started with a solid 4. Even the most fervent death grip couldn't cause a call to drop out on Telstra, Optus or 3, although it did significantly affect call quality. At times, callers complained that my voice was cutting out and suffering from terrible metallic distortion, making me sound like a robot having a bad day. Unfortunately, Vodafone couldn't survive the death grip in the car park, dropping a call after about 20 seconds. Even when I released the phone, I couldn't make a call, so I guess the reception must have been borderline to begin with. The death grip had claimed its first victim, but I wanted to push on. What I needed was a real reception torture test. I know it sounds a little crazy, but I decided to stick the iPhone 4 in the oven. Holding the phone right down the back of the oven without the death grip, I could still receive a strong enough signal on each network to maintain a call. Applying the death grip was enough to see calls drop out on 3 and Vodafone, but not Telstra or Optus. Of course, your mileage may vary depending on the proximity of your local mobile towers and the construction of your oven. I realise these aren't exactly scientific conditions and that there are a lot of variables at play, but it's certainly a good indication that the iPhone 4 death grip is unlikely to affect most urban Australians. This concurs with what I'm reading in Australia's online forums, that it's quite difficult to cause an iPhone 4 to drop a call by applying the death grip. Those who can make the phone drop calls need to be in a very poor signal area and then grip the handset more firmly than they ever normally would. If you do live in a really terrible reception area, the death grip might make things a bit worse. The free iPhone case from Apple reportedly helps with the issue, but I haven't had a chance to test it myself. Telstra has recommended regional customers use a case. Of course, the Death Grip is going to extend the edges of black spots, so people who live on the cusp of a bad reception area might start to encounter problems that they hadn't previously experienced. If you have problems with call dropouts while you're in the car, the Death Grip shouldn't make it any worse because you shouldn't be holding the phone while you drive. We're talking about a $200 fine and some demerit points, so do yourself a favour and invest in a good hands-free car kit. The one issue that most Death Grip coverage has ignored is that of data speeds. Applying the Death Grip while sitting at my kitchen table saw mobile broadband speeds drop by more than 50% on each network. Three was by far the worst affected, dropping to dial-up speeds. It's actually an issue that's more likely to affect right-handers than left-handers, as right-handers are likely to hold the phone in their left hand while they're using the internet features. It's certainly something you want to keep an eye on, although it's obviously easier to watch the bars when you're browsing the web rather than making a call with the phone held to your ear. So what's the verdict? As long as you've got a half-decent signal to begin with, the iPhone 4 Death Grip shouldn't present a problem in Australia. As a Telstra NextG customer, I'm certainly not going to let fear of the Death Grip deter me from upgrading to the latest iPhone.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I don't have any of those issues anymore now that I've moved to Froyo.
Froyo.
On the droid.
Good on you, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
And you've popped it inside the oven. Now, the experiment that I did years and years ago, we're trying to prove about three different things. One of them was...
Cold.
Yes, you're right, JD. Mm. One of them was the temperature at
which...
You're
trying to build a Faraday shield, if I recall.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think I had a Sony Ericsson handset at the time, and I was trying to prove that it would work under a certain operating temperature, one. Mm. I was trying to prove, two, how good the network coverage of three was, and...
In fridge.
And three, coverage. That the video calling feature would work, so we put the...
And four, phone... to make sure the light didn't stay on.
That was the whole purpose, Graham, wasn't it? That was the premise, was to see if the light turned off when you closed the fridge door.
So we set up come a long way, haven't we?
we set up a video call on the three network, and we put it in the fridge and closed the fridge, and we proved that the network coverage was good, the video calling worked, the light went out when you shut the fridge door... What was the other thing?
We were absolutely insane.
We were absolutely insane. But having thought that we were absolutely insane, Adam's now done it
in the oven.
In an oven. But he didn't say how hot the oven was.
Was it microwave or conventional?
In the chat room, you said no. It was set to 180 degrees
for 10 minutes.
For 10 minutes, preheated, fan-forced oven. Good work, Adam. You've done well. Good test. It'll take us some years to trump that one. Yes, Mad Minute and then Gadget Website Oddspot, Nelly. How we going?
A bit of Coro. I found my tweet that came across on the new Twitter. Sorry?
Nothing.
Yeah, good.
Move on.
It's actually only half a tweet. I don't know how you do that. Obviously, you're tweeting too much. Hello to OBX3Y. You know who you are. You sent a thing that says... At Tech Talk Radio or DS, which one do you guys recommend me to get tomorrow? Yeah.
What was the question?
It's only half a question. She's just started. I assume it's she because it's a picture of a girl in the icon that says, or DS, which one do you guys recommend me to get tomorrow? Well, the DS is looking pretty good because you didn't give us an option.
Oh, go the iPhone or the iTouch or an iPad.
Oh, yeah. Actually, speaking of iPads, we've got a survey here, which I was going to talk about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it keeps getting held over. And I'm going to get to it because it's on the bench here in front of me.
Look, you keep saying that, but yes. I don't think you will.
And it's our mission
on this side of the bench to stop you from
let
getting
me talk
to it.
Briefly about what's on the front cover and one grab from it. We might get to it next week. It's the iPad opinion profile. Now, 20,000 US people were polled, and
you just said about 15 P's without popping.
Yeah,
you did quite well.
I've done
iPad opinion profile and people were polled.
Anyway, roughly 18% of selfish elites are iPad owners, making them up to 6 times more likely to own an iPad than the average person. Independent geeks are up to 3 times more likely to be a critic of the iPad. Now, you know how we love surveys.
What's
in this...
What's an independent geek?
A geek, well, I'm assuming that it's somebody like potentially... a journalist who has no affiliations with any particular newspaper or anything like that who enjoys technology.
But a geek journalist, not a normal journalist.
No, and it might not even be a journalist. It could be you, me, the person who just walked past the screen there outside of the studio here. It could be anybody. Hello. You know who you are. So there you go. Anyway, there's a great thing about iPads because we haven't spoken about them for a while.
Well, we have talked about them. Steve has released recently some commentary that the iPad was developed before the iPhone.
Steve being
the great man,
Mr. Jobs. Mr. Jobs to you. Okay, so the iPad was developed
first. This is the rumor going around, and that they said, fantastic tablet device, fantastic, I can make a phone out of that.
Homework for you this week, JD. Have a look at the patent numbers. See which was patented first.
I can do that right now.
Oh, off you go then. That'll keep you busy.
There you go. According to a recent poll, the iPad is not at all the sort of thing they like to use in Poland.
For what?
Think about that. Carry on.
Graham, you're a bit obscure sometimes, but that's why we have you here.
Oh, dear. Yes. All right. In other brief, you remember a while back we had a competition?
Save us, Andrew. Save us.
A competition. We had to caption a certain...
Mr. Conroy laughing with Mr. Rudd.
It seems like years ago since we did that.
It does. It seems like a long time.
So much has happened. Anyway, you might also remember that Mark in Geelong was the winner of our competition. We gave him a set of little...
Oh, the hamburgers.
The hamburger menu. Yep. I've still got another pair. We can give those away later.
Really?
Absolutely. Okay. In the box.
Well, that'll keep people listening.
This is... we'll just throw them away. Give them to someone
else. We don't know when. Just keep listening until we give them away 1 week. Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, Mark just sent me an email today saying, just a quick note to let you know that I received the Moshi Mini speakers today, the 16th of August.
Hey. Oh, good, good, good.
I can see you emailed them. I can see you mailed them around 3 weeks ago. Good old Australia Post living up to their well-deserved reputation. Mark, Mary, I'm glad you're getting some use out of them, and I'm glad you finally got them. But
good on you, Mark. Thanks for the feedback.
It was just a regular parcel, local post office, sent.
Three weeks.
Not bad for 90 kilometres down the road. Well done, Aussie Post.
I happen to know that they're inundated at the moment because of this damn election. And whereas in the past they'd be able to skip over every couple of houses and not have to deliver anything, they've had a lot of stopping all stations runs, as they call them, and because they've had mail that they've had to put in every letterbox as part of the election.
Personally addressed to everybody from the local member and the local candidate for the other party.
Exactly, and it's driving them nutso. So they've probably got
us nutso getting it all too. I can tell you,
so probably got a bit of a backlog. Australia Post at the moment, but that's okay.
What are we going to talk about next week?
They do what they can do.
You know what, Mr. Australia Post? If you don't feel like dropping that in my letterbox, just don't bother.
They have to, don't they? It's addressed to you. It's official mail until it arrives in your little mailbox.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You just write return to sender on it and dump it back in the letterbox.
Well, you only encourage them if you do that.
You're exacerbating the problem that Australia Post has, but...
It's like returning to spam.
Exactly. You're not going to open it and read it, are you?
No. And what's the sitting member going to do with all those envelopes returned back to them?
That's their problem.
Exactly. UK regulators are reopening the Google Street View case. I just noticed that Darren from the UK popped in there before. Apparently, he's got a Droid device working really well.
He does. Hi, Darren.
The UK Information Commissioner's Office said it would take into consideration the findings of its international counterparts in continuing investigations into the Wi-Fi payload data collected by Google during its Street View operations. Why do you go like that? Why is that pained look on your face, Graham? Has this been done to death?
Yeah, I think people get on the wrong end of this.
But
Google's illegally collecting data, aren't they?
It's not like
they... Makes for a really fast application on Android finding where your location is.
We have been over this before. They collected data, but it's data that people made publicly available through their own stupidity, so...
Okay.
Google apologised. They said they were sorry. It wasn't their intention to collect that data.
They didn't ever publicise the data. They didn't make it available as search results.
It's just used in
search. No, they didn't.
It?
No.
No.
Doesn't it use for... Anyway. In other news, speaking of things that have snuck under the radar this week, because we're sort of in the manic minute because I've got so much to get through and we haven't had a chance to tonight. BlackBerry assures India on access to service. Now, how about this? This is RIM, the manufacturer of the BlackBerry. Their data is so well encrypted that certain organisations in certain countries...
It's
don't like
them.
Them
to have it.
They say no, you can't have that because
we
can't decrypt it.
Was this the problem in Saudi Arabia as well?
Yes.
I wondered what that was about. Yeah.
So, Research in Motion or RIM has promised India a technical solution for decoding encrypted BlackBerry data. Their concerns was the fact that all these people that like making bombs and terrorists and all those nasty things. Oh, we shouldn't say that these days because they'll be picked up somewhere in someone's audio monitoring system. But you know those people. That they can conspire to do things using BlackBerry devices and get away with it because the authorities in those countries can't decrypt it. Really? Is that
Absolutely. This is the ridiculous situation that we were faced with here, what, 10 or 15 years ago when the...
Oh, mobile phones. Yeah, intentional mobile phones.
Absolutely. The deployment of the GSM telephone networks was delayed in Australia until our intelligence organisations got up to speed and were able to intercept the communications passing over the GSM networks.
They needed a black box like Willie had.
They did. And until such time as they could do that, they weren't Telstra or Telecom at the time weren't allowed to turn on the GSM network.
They did a good job rolling out copper, didn't they?
Who, ASIO?
No, Telstra.
Oh.
When they were Telecom.
Yeah, they did. They did a very good job.
The Postmaster General. Remember them?
Postmaster General's department, yes.
You walk down the street,
they were Telecom Australia up until about 1993 or something. Not all that long ago.
Yeah, then some graphic designer got to their logo and they became Telstra.
Well, they were Telecom Australia with that orange funny logo that they have now for a short time.
You
and
walk
they
down
became
any,
Telstra.
Any of the older streets in Melbourne and reminisce when you step over a pit in the street that says PMG on it?
Mm.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, back to BlackBerry. RIM faces an August 31st deadline to give authorities the means to read, email and instant messages sent over BlackBerry. New Delhi says that it will pull the plug if RIM won't comply.
So what happens if someone brings a BlackBerry device into India and puts a SIM card in and starts using it?
Well,
is that against the law?
I don't know whether using a device is against the law, but the fact that they're not going to let them be sold, I'm assuming, in India because the government can't eavesdrop on it should it need to. But I would have thought the network would be able to, once it gets through the decoding stage, like you do a phone tap. Can't they do that these days? Modern technology, surely.
Yeah, but it's not as simple as it used to be. It's all data now. You have to be able to intercept the data and decrypt the data.
Make it simpler than it used to be.
No, it's simple to intercept, but it's not as simple to decrypt and to...
No, you just don't intercept it at the point where it's encrypted. You intercept it after it's been decrypted.
That's what I'm saying, at the exchange.
Yeah.
When it goes back to voice.
Yeah.
Probably not quite analog, but you know what I mean.
But if it does go back to voice, if it's
goes back to data or whatever,
if it's a BlackBerry device to a BlackBerry device, it might just stay as encrypted data.
Well, it still has to go through a BlackBerry server where it presumably gets...
Oh, of course it does. Yes. Yeah, because BlackBerry have their own secret universe of BlackBerry stuff, don't they?
So it won't be the encryption won't be end-to-end device to device. The encryption will be end-to-end device to server, and then it'll be re-encrypted again to go out to the new device.
You're right,
with a different key.
They have
so at the BlackBerry server, you should be able to get everything.
Mm.
So BlackBerry users declare them if you're going to Delhi very shortly for the games. All right, WikiLeaks to become a Swedish publisher. WikiLeaks has applied to become an official recognised Swedish publisher, according to reports, in order to prevent the whistleblowers that leak information to the site from being pursued in the courts. Obviously, Sweden has some form of immunity or treaties or whatever they call them between other countries, but the application has been made under the assumptions that WikiLeaks sources would be protected under Sweden's press freedom laws, which makes it an illegal to reveal the identity of a source and for authorities to investigate a source. Go Sweden. Now, that's what you hear. That's progressive laws, isn't it? So WikiLeaks is going to head over there.
The reason why...
I can think of a few Australian publications that could go there too, just quietly.
Yeah, WikiLeaks was in the news for all the wrong reasons a couple of weeks ago because of that massive leak of US military intelligence that happened through the site.
Yes, they're alleging all sorts of nasty things now, so I don't know whether that's good, bad or indifferent. All right, Apple manager charged with taking kickbacks. No, say it's not true. Mm. The manager at Apple has been charged in California with taking kickbacks he received after leaking corporate secrets to Asian companies that supplied iPhone and iPod accessories. Paul Shin Devine, a group supply manager at a technological company for Apple since 2005, was accused by federal authorities of accepting kickbacks from six Asian companies. Yeah. Korea, China, Taiwan and Singapore. Divine 37 also faced a civil suit filed by Apple, which accused him of receiving more than $1 million in payment and bribes over several years. Naughty, naughty.
Pass on secrets and get some money.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of, yes.
It's got to be worse than leaving your iPhone 4 behind somewhere, surely.
Well, it'd sort of take the heat off a bit, wouldn't it?
In the bar before it's released.
Or Ericsson, the makers of, used to make phones. Then Sony took them over and it became Sony Ericsson. Maybe they merged. But Ericsson was always the back end. They supplied the telcos.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, they make the base stations and things, yeah.
Yeah, Ericsson make huge amounts of equipment for telephone networks all around the world.
Well, Ericsson have released some figures and they're saying that around 225,000 terabytes of data traverse mobile networks each month. That's a lot of data.
A lot of data, yeah.
So the network vendor said mobile data was growing exponentially despite mobile broadband accounting for only 10% of the total mobile subscription. Global mobile data has nearly tripled in the last year, growing more than 10 times faster than voice, which is really where it's going.
That. Yeah,
because in the news last week, Telstra, one of the reasons why their bottom line was falling was the fact that everyone was still moving away from fixed line telephones in droves. People are rather opting for having a mobile device or a mobile broadband device or wirelessly connected.
And once everyone moves to some form of VoIP, whether it be Skype on your smartphone or something similar in the house, will you be actually able to tell the difference between voice and data?
Well, I use VoIP at work, and it actually sounds better than the fixed line, the old, you know, twisted pair, as they say, going back
have
to
you
the
got
telephone
a filter
exchange.
On your phone, have you? I to make you sound better.
I don't believe so, but the audio quality is much more dynamic, I've found, speaking to a lot of customers of recent times. All right, yeah, so that was a little bit of mobile broadband news, which is pretty much part of the course. Data is king. Just going to move
if
everywhere.
You think back 10 years, you might only be making twice as many phone calls as you did, but you're using infinitely more data because you weren't using any back then.
No, that's true.
And now you use data on the mobile phone network all the time.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people who have naked DSL with a VoIP service these days.
There's a lot of that going on the fixed network, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just giving customers another reason, or consumers another reason, more the point, to actually drop the fixed line these days because they don't need it. Everyone's got a mobile.
Everybody's got a mobile. You tend to use the mobile now too because everyone's on cap, so it doesn't you don't perceive that it costs you anything to use the mobile phone because you're paying X number of dollars a month, and you've got that spare capacity to make the extra phone calls. Doesn't cost you anymore. So
compared to when phones were first released, those of us that remember.
Yes, when the mobiles first came out, it was a big deal to decide to use the mobile phone because that was very expensive.
Yes.
And now it's, yeah.
Andrew mentioned naked DSL before. So a naked service means that you have a normal telephone line coming into the house, but there's no actual telephone service, no traditional telephone service on that line.
That's so, right. You can't pick it up and get dial tone.
You had the normal phone service and the internet service being delivered over the phone line sort of on different channels, if you like. And now, we're turning off the simple channel of the phone service and just using it for the
data.
0386828836 is Tech Talk Radio's feedback number. That's a VoIP service, if you hadn't worked it out.
Mm.
So, yes, and the great thing I find about VoIP services too is you get a lot of extra bang for your buck. Like, you get the things that Telstra used to charge you, like, $6 a month for caller ID and... Telstra would charge you for a lot of things in a fixed line arrangement, whereas it all comes free. Like voicemail, ringing your voicemail is all free. It's all part of the service these days.
Some of them email your voicemails to you.
Yeah, exactly, which is terrific. Mm. And, you pay a flat fee. You pay $10 a month, and all the phone calls you can make, excluding mobiles. But, you pay that one flat fee, and I think that's really good. It's not churning up anywhere near the bandwidth of what data is.
Mm.
So, all right, Photoshop is a great program. A lot of people are probably familiar with that. It's coming to the iPad. There's an express version of Photoshop. It hasn't quite sunk in how they're going to do Photoshop with a finger on an iPad.
Adobe Photoshop.
Yeah, if you're talking to Adam.
Adobe.
Yeah. Hi, Adam. Photoshop Express coming to an iPad near you. I'm not sure what you're going to use it for. Probably tricking up the family photos.
Yeah.
Everyone's got big fingers, so I don't know how detailed you're going to get. Maybe this is going to be the return of the mouse or something like that. Or a stylus, maybe?
No, I can't see Steve behind that.
For touching up photographs, you probably don't need that, that finer touch. You're not going to that sort of level.
Well, yes, consumers will be...
In fact, it's probably better to have a broad brush strokes.
Well, yes, maybe.
What are you going to want to do with Photoshop on an iPad?
That's my question,
for goodness
exactly.
Goodness sake.
Oh, just simple things. Like
what do you want to do with Flash on an iPad?
Just tweaking the brightness and contrast and
basic,
making it
basic
look,
gradients and airbrushing and things out.
No.
Although Photoshop is a very high-end application. It's not something you just load up just to do minor little tweaky things.
This isn't full Photoshop. This is
Photoshop
Express iPad version of Photoshop.
Photoshop Lite.
But you might want to change the file type from one to another. I use Photoshop for that for a lot of things, to just change file types and
But a lot of
encoding.
People wouldn't. We're super freaks when it comes to doing that sort of stuff, but most people wouldn't, would they? If they wanted to change a file type, would they really have installed Photoshop and have that running and use that for doing the type of work?
formerly known as Photoshop.com Mobile, Photoshop Express purports to give your iPad the ability to crop, adjust, and apply effects to the photo you sync to your iPad or capture using one of Apple's camera kit attachments.
Yeah, you see, this is what's important to consumers, is you've got to be able to put a flowery frame around the image and make it go...
Oh, that's not Photoshop. That's, you know...
But that's what this is.
Things.
Here's an interesting footnote. However, Photoshop Express didn't allow the opening of PSD files, as there was no easy way to send them to the app from your desktop
system. So it's not Photoshop. It's bastardized Apple cut-down Photoshop Lite.
Something that's been through the ringer, otherwise known as the App Store, I suspect.
Sounds like it.
It's a consumer-level photo tinkering software that's not Photoshop, but it's got Photoshop name on it.
Anti-malware tests. Apparently, they're not doing too flash with some of the newer operating systems. About a third of anti-malware products tested by a mob called Virus Bulletin failed to secure Windows Vista Business Edition Service Pack 2 and crumbling under the pressure of a heavy attack. Of the 54 products tested by the vendor, 19 failed to reach the standard required. And the VB100 test is what dictates that standard. And it assessed anti-malware products against the test set from a wild list, a list known of viruses to be circulating on computers that is maintained by a group of antivirus researchers. Graham, do you find that amazing that a lot of antivirus products just aren't keeping up with some of today's more modern viruses and more modern operating systems?
I'm afraid I don't find that terribly amazing. I'm kind of used to it now.
So it really is, there are better ones out there. It'd
be interesting to look and see which ones didn't pass and which ones did.
Okay.
In the big names.
Yeah, well, they haven't actually gone and listed all those sort of things, and there's probably good reason why they haven't done that. So
probably need to go and find that research and have a read of it ourselves.
But one in three of these antivirus programs didn't quite cut it. I'm wondering if they're some of the ones that you find that, you know, are really sort of taking to spammy advertising, you know, attaching themselves to other programs. You know, when you say you download a game or download something, would you like a copy of such and such as antivirus?
Yeah.
Anti-spyware. You know, maybe it's those guys there that just can't keep up with the Joneses or the big boys.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just... I think Microsoft have got their own antivirus stuff now too, which comes out. What do you think of that? Just out of curiosity, do you see much of that floating around? What do they call it? It's a free version of antivirus, and it floats around quite a bit.
Won't come into my head at
not
the
moment. Not Defender. That's the anti-spyware.
Yeah,
It's the Security Essentials or something strange like that. Which, if you Google it, you'll find it. But yeah, it's been around for a while.
Haven't used it much, I have to say, if at all.
Yep, smoked in our chat room. Says Microsoft Security Essentials.
What a guess. Yeah, no, I must admit, when you don't want to put an antivirus software on a machine for whatever reason, I've popped that on a couple of machines.
Yeah.
And just because it works with a Microsoft OS, it sort of gets its security updates and patches. Seem to work
quite
well. Yeah,
I've got it on my old XP machine because I've moved my Kaspersky license to my new machine.
Uh-huh.
But I don't use that machine. I don't web browse on it anymore, so it doesn't... I don't read my email on that machine anymore, so it doesn't come under attack, so...
Very good. All right, just brief. Sorry, Dr. Ron.
Smoked in our chat room also wants Photoshop on the Nintendo DS.
What about the iPhone?
Adobe should get onto that.
You could do it on the iPhone, couldn't you? That small screen. If it works on the iPad, surely it'll work on the iPhone, wouldn't it? Same kernel?
And please don't send emails telling us how to pronounce Adobe either.
No, send them to Adam.
We've been through that.
Yes. Sorry, Adam. Yes.
All right. Just briefly before we go to the Oddspot Gadget website of the week, what a show it's been today. Here in Victoria, there's been a bit of a brouhaha recently about video cameras and people snapping images in places that they shouldn't, change room toilets, etc. Now, apparently the Victorian Law Reform Commission has called for the state government to modernise surveillance laws in response to advances in this brand new technology. This is a classic example of bureaucracy being at least 2 years behind where we're at. With mobile phones and cameras and devices, isn't it? But in its Surveillance in Public Places report, tabled in Parliament, the Commission made 33 recommendations expected to balance the benefits of the survey of surveillance with privacy. Now, Dr. Ron, is this... They're talking about things like happy slapping, which I think made the ABC News the other night, where people just get beat up for the sake of putting something up on YouTube. You know, and all those other, you know, nasty things like skirting and all the strange things that people do.
Yes, upskirting, which is illegal.
That's it. Can the laws protect people from these sort of things, do you reckon? Anyone?
Yeah, well, the laws are there.
You've
got to
be caught, firstly,
don't
you?
The laws are existing, but they need to be policed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they? That's right.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, there's existing laws that are being broken that you could use. But one of the ones I heard was a proposal to make it illegal to make a recording to film or tape an event that's being staged for
purely for the purposes of publishing
a crime or an assault that's being staged for the phone, and the camera operator is committing an offence as well.
Okay,
has society really gone that bad? Like, is a law going to prevent people from doing that?
Well,
they're going to do it anyway, surely.
If there are loopholes where there are, it won't prevent people from being complete idiots, because that's the nature of people.
I would have thought once they've committed the crime, it's going to hand law enforcement some form of evidence, which is going to make it fairly easy to prosecute. But nonetheless, it's not going to stop them from doing it, because it's...
But at the moment, there's certain loopholes. Like, if someone goes out and there's people committing an offence in order for someone to film it, and the person filming it isn't committing an offence at the moment, and they're trying to create a law so that he is, then that probably makes sense.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Rapidly running out of time on this pre-election show. This time next week, we'll be talking about what happened. Has the dust settled? In the meanwhile, Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up after this.
Suffering succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh, but that's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free, and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on...
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Interesting!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own.
This week's gadget contributed by US correspondent Mark Diggins. Mark says he was impressed with a recent discovery in Rhode Island, parking meters that accept credit cards directly.
Don't give them ideas here.
Parking meter season started on a Saturday just as the city experienced its first summer-like weekend, which drew scores of visitors to Aquidneck Island to shop, tan and dine. As per usual, parking was scarce in the city's downtown core, with many private lots quickly filling to capacity. For those who found on-street parking, some agreed with the new technology introduced by the city's Economic Development Office. The city of Newport has installed 30 new smart parking meters in Washington Square and along stretches of Thames Street, designed to increase metered parking revenue. The big advantage is that the new meters accept credit and debit cards. How good's that?
Great.
You can just put your Visa card straight in, swipe it in, pull it out again, and
with
you get debited.
Minimum transaction.
With a 3% surcharge for Amex and all the rest of the stuff.
I don't know if they have their minimum surcharge, but it saves you having to fish around for change and... Although
it makes it really easy for them to sneak the fees up without you having to, without you feeling it at the time.
Well, without feeling it at the time, I suppose.
Yeah.
The other thing
I hate having to find change for parking. You never have enough change to put in a parking meter, do you?
I do too, that's right. The one thing that we have here in Melbourne, which is huge, is those boxes on the side of the road where you select the bay number you're in, don't you? You push bay 4 and then put the money in them.
And you get it wrong. Okay.
Oh, paid for someone else's parking.
Yeah. That's our gadget, Andrew, contributed by Mark Diggins, the Rhode Island credit card parking meters.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
www.flavorstudios.com, flavor spelt in the American fashion, / iPhone icon generator. They'll put this link up in the show notes, but this is an online icon generator and it works very, very well and very, very easily, and it's very, very
free. Today with Vista and Windows 7, the .ICO or icon format can display an icon up to 256 by 256 pixels. The iPhone and iPod Touch implementation differ slightly from the normal Fav icon link tag. The iPhone application icon generator, which is on this website, is a free tool to create iPhone-like Fav icons or favorite icons, Apple Touch icon, PNG files, .ICO files for use in Windows. What you do is you upload an image, just click your way through, you say what sort of format you want, and it prepares a zip file for you. It just downloads to your computer, you unzip it, and you've got all your icons there based on the image you've uploaded. Very, very easy to use, very clever. So I thought that was a good one for this week. Good website. The URL is www.flavorstudios, FLAVOR studios.com /iPhone-icon-generator.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A number of images from Google Street View show an unearthly being walking the streets of Europe. It is the body of a man. It is the head of a horse. They are on the very same being. The BBC says that horse boy, as he's become known, is now a regular on Street View images of Aberdeen in Scotland, where the days are cold and the nights echo with foreboding. People from all over Europe have allegedly been contacting Britain's most august news organisation in order to claim that they've met him, though none so far has claimed to have ridden him or fed him carrots. Horseboy, it seems, moves very quickly all around the European continent. Perhaps behind his purple shirt he has wings. There are even those who reportedly claim you can find footage on Google Street View that shows him to be a real human putting on a cheap horse mask. But I've seen some of these Street View images. They're very, very funny. It's this dude walking along with a horse head.
Excellent.
That's our Odd Spot, Andrew.
That is our show for the week. Yes. I hope you've enjoyed it. But don't forget to come along and say your piece, 0386828836. We've got an election between now and then. This time next week will be very interesting. We should know the fate of the country and the NBN or anything else. Okay, that's Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thanks for joining us. Same time, same station. All four of us, we're going to head out to the car park, and the show will continue probably for the next hour or so.
You won't be able to listen to that, though.
No, you won't. You won't. All right, till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8pm from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.